Good morning, everybody. It is, what, Wednesday, the 18th of August, and our last Wednesday show, because from next week on, we're only doing Fridays, but we are doing this Friday as well, so don't panic. And if you, I've worked it out, right? If you break up this coming Friday's show into half hours, then it can last you the whole week. You know how your parents give you, like, pathetic pocket money? My parents never gave me regular pocket money, so if I did get pocket money, they'd suddenly... I don't know if it was out of guilt or because the cupboards were bare at home and I had to buy something at the tuck shop, but they'd go, all right, here's $5. Make it last all week. It'd be like, $5? It's going to last all week. What planet are you living on? Anyway, this morning, we've got some very, very cool people in the studio. I haven't seen the one guy for a little while now, and I love it when he comes in. And he said, and there are already questions in the comment section. He said, is James still in J-Bay? Yeah, he's still in J-Bay. Ben believes he's gone there to introduce his girlfriend to his parents.
Uh-oh.
So Ben thinks he's getting engaged. But Dave Levinson is here, and Dave was thrilled when he heard that James wasn't going to be here because he said everything will work, which is not too far from the truth. Right, Flex? Right, Getsy? Yeah. And we're joined by two massive heavyweights in South African comedy because it's not only Dave Levinson, but the fantastic and brilliant Kurt Schoenraert. How are you, Kurt?
Oh, lekker. Thank you very much.
Good to see you, dude.
Thank you very much for having us.
What a pleasure.
It's a little early, though. Eh? Comedians really don't function at this time.
It's like when I used to do this show on Radio 2. We'd have musicians come in.
Were you on Radio 2?
I was on radio. I've been in radio so long. It was the second radio ever made, Radio 2.
Let's start off seriously.
These musicians would come in, and they always used to either drink and party or do gigs late at night, like comedians, and they'd always be a fucking mess that next morning. The voice would be like...
I know I'm getting old. I was invited back to... Keenan and I were invited to a party last night after the movie premiere. So it's one of those production house... parties, but the movie ended at 11.
They still do
now
those.
Think about it. There would just be a couple of drinks and maybe a few hookers and some coke. Nothing big.
Nothing large.
But I said to Keaton, I got to lift tomorrow at 5. Are we going to go to bed? Like in the old days, I'd be at that party. I'd come straight from that party to here in someone else's clothes.
Yes.
Nah, I needed my sleep.
Well, it was pretty much the same thing for me last night. I was invited to a very fancy schmancy hotel, which I won't mention any names, but I was meeting with a mate of mine called Michael Mittermeier, German comedian, German comedian.
Okay.
And he's in town for one night, so I got to meet with him, and it was great. But it was like, why don't you stay and have some more time, fun with
how
us?
Much was
like,
how much was your steak?
$800 or something.
Oh, wow. I'm trying to think which hotel that might be. Because
you know exactly which one it is. It's the Saxon.
That's expensive.
No, it was fantastic.
And he goes there.
But it's a beautiful hotel.
It's fabulous.
Listen, you know, I was talking to a friend of mine who's opening up a coffee shop. He wants to... I said to him, first of all, you're insane because that's such a competitive environment, right?
It is.
I mean, if you're in the hospitality business, you've got to be so fucking sharp. It's a horrible job. So I said to him, you're crazy. But second of all, there are places that are allowed to charge a fortune for a coffee or for a steak because they've got reputation. They've spent every bit of detailed attention looking at, you know, the decor and the music and the staff have been trained. And you kind of expect a top-tier experience there. So people don't mind shelling out money. It would burn me to pay, what, 500, 800?
$800.
Yes, for a steak. But I'll tell you what, it must have been good.
No, it was the whole thing was fantastic. Start to finish, everybody was, the staff was like exceptional. Yeah. Back to the coffee thing. Mm. You know, the profit margin on a cup of coffee is insane. It's a really decent business model, I think.
Yeah. And you see them opening up everywhere now. I've seen a lot of these Plato's. Obviously, there were a couple of Starbucks when they came to South Africa. Do you remember how excited people were?
Costa's here now.
Yeah, Costa. But remember, I mean, like South Africans, they saw it once in America and they're like, oh my God, Starbucks is coming. It's like when Burger King or McDonald's first opened here. And then after a while, they're like, ugh, you want to go there?
What? South Africans are very brand drunk, you know, we are. Yeah. So we see it in the movies, and it's been sponsored and picked up or product placed or. Yep. And when it shows up as a brand in on our shores, we scheme it's the best thing on the planet.
You're right.
Until you figure out that it's actually quite cut and paste and cuck, actually.
And yeah. And I mean, the people in the country that it comes from think it's cuck as well.
How many Starbucks does Cyril own?
No, he owns. He used to own McDonald's. I think he divested himself of all that stuff, I'm not actually Burger sure. Key. No, I think he got out of McDonald's.
Did he say, he might still be involved. In one basket.
I mean, he can't even hold on to his iPad, so I wouldn't be surprised if he lost a good investment like that too. But you were talking about coffee, and you're right. I mean, the price people will pay for a good cup of coffee. And remember, for most people, that's 5 days a week, eh?
Man, in Cape Town,
yeah.
It's an art form, this producing the, like, getting the right barista in and making sure the coffee's high-tier stuff.
Yeah.
And there's a reason it pops up all over wherever there's a lot of traffic. I mean, we go walking in the forest quite often, like 3-4 times a week.
What, you and you walk around in the forest? Who are you walking with?
No, listen.
Stick of the dump.
Okay.
I walk straight
into that one over there.
No, walk around the forest?
I take my dog
like
for a walk.
Like a, what, like a Bergie?
Just the old Bergie cruise in the morning. Hey, how you doing? Are you all right there? No,
what is this, in like Newlands?
Yeah, Newlands.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, so there's nice.
Two coffee shops at the entrance of Newlands. Two. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, listen, there's a lot of traffic, and I guess it's warranted. But if you consider that like 25 to 30 bucks a cup, and that costs you about five bucks to make
it. It's flavored water.
And that's everywhere in Cape Town. There are some big brands that have popped up.
Well, this oak here started making beer once. You remember that?
I remember Dave Brew. I'll never forget
that. I've still got a bottle of it somewhere. I just kept it because I
don't touch it. Drink it.
No, but it's a memento.
It's got a lot of my DNA in it.
Oh, God.
That's way too much info now.
That is that's technically...
Get a black light on that beer.
That's technically sexual assault. I mean...
But it's not. I distributed it very differently. I didn't do a Diddy or a Epstein.
No, but I thought it was cool that you were doing that. I mean,
that was a good business model as well, because I didn't make the beer. A guy made it for me.
Yeah, right.
And I sold it at Golf Days at a price. So, and then Cyril closed my shop down. Still got the Beetle.
Yeah.
I made it into the. I saw in the parking lot. Ben was here, so he could start it, because that man has no clue how classic cars work. Maybe he had to move it.
Listen, there are so few people who know anything about how cars work anymore, because everything's electronic now, right?
So last night we saw rubber, but there's three of us in the Beetle, and we realized like one of the guys at the back was too heavy, and the wheel was touching the arch, so he had to sit up like this in the car, make himself lighter.
Fuck, and people think. Comedians are only funny on stage. This is what goes on behind the scenes.
The truth is, funny shit happens to comedians, so we have something to talk about. Otherwise, it'll just be boring up there.
Okay, I want you to try and analyze this shit for me.
Oh boy.
I had the weirdest dream last night. I dreamt I was taking a shit, but I was taking in front of a whole lot of people.
Oh, well, there's method to that, apparently.
That's money.
Deciphering your dreams, taking a shit in front of people... reckons there might be some financial issues there, my bro.
Good or bad?
Bad.
Oh, fuck.
Is it bad? So losing teeth is good money.
Really?
Yeah.
Dreams.
Taking not in a real shit's life. Not...
No, so it was very...
Did you know the people or were they randoms?
Randoms. It was randoms. I didn't recognize any faces, but I remember...
What happens is you often say, I don't give a shit about what people think. You literally are the opposite. You gave a shit
in my dream, I gave a shit. It was weird, though, because it was sort of like a European, they had these, it wasn't like I was sitting on a toilet on a stage in front of people. There was like a screen, but everybody was taking shits in public.
the slow lounge has got a blue with a view.
Yeah, they do.
Everybody having a shit in public. I think that's just like the economy going sideways.
That's
a collective shit.
Probably all of us.
Now we wait for the comments. Just sit and wait.
Yeah. All right. So let's get to it. Bitcoin Boot says Seattle is cuck. He's talking about coffee now.
Not the country.
Steven says they charge you a fortune for coffee and then they give you a stick to stir it. That's about right.
That stick thing has got me. The wooden, the tongue depressors.
Yeah, why?
They must be using 8 trillion of those things and the trees are dying.
Sure. Give me plastic, man.
Plastic.
I mean,
talking about tongue depressors and complete waste of one-time only plastic use, I was at the local pharmacy the other day, and I bought some Sinutab, and they put it in a cage for me.
Yeah.
And then put a cable tie on it. I literally walked about five, and a packet, wrapped in a packet tight. Like,
What is going to happen? I need to understand that. What's going to happen between when the dispensary gives you the thing in the cage
what are
and the till? What I mean, are there tzotzis in the shop who are going to fucking stop you on the way and change your medication? Or
so I literally walk about 5 meters over to the checkout place, the checkout counter, and the goose takes out a little pliers and she cuts the cable tie. I'm like, that was a complete waste of cable tie.
Correct.
You don't feel manly at all carrying that cage. There's no way to carry it.
Wire purse.
You put it under your arm, you look weird. You carry it and you walk like this with your little cage. And then if someone does try to sniff your drugs, they can sniff through the cage.
Yeah.
Well, I think what they're trying to do there is to make sure you're not putting any cuck else that shouldn't be in the cage.
But what are you going to put in? Because all the other stuff's on the shelves. You can't get into the dispensary anyway.
I reckon they just reckon there's a problem with pilferage on shelves as you between the pharmacy and the checkout counter.
So you mean like you could take something and put it in the bag?
In the bag. I think that's what they're afraid of. They clearly have an issue with the pilferage thing.
I mean, it wasn't so long ago you'd go to the chemist and they'd just give you the box with the pills in.
Yeah.
And you'd put it with the rest of your shit in your trolley or in your fucking basket.
When you go to one of those mom and pop shops, there are chemists like that in South Africa where you can, it's just family run type of stuff.
You're like, hey, can I have a recurring thing on those sinus pills?
Exactly. You can even wink a little bit.
And the lady's like, yeah, sure, no problem. Kurt, how are you? Haven't seen you here in a while.
How's Dave? Does he need Viagra?
Are your stools more firm lately?
The loo of the view at the slow lounge has got that one way glass, and you can really take a dump while watching planes.
That's true.
Late.
I don't like public bathrooms, which again makes the stream of mine pretty weird because I never shit in public.
Yeah. It's got to be something. This one, I don't think dreams matter.
Yeah, and I woke up this morning thinking, like, what does that mean symbolically?
Can I tell you other dream that you must never have?
What?
Is the dream that you're having a wee. Because you are.
That's God's little joke. It's warm for a little bit. And also having a poo in public is that you've got to do it with your foot out like that all the time. For the door.
And you've got to hover.
The funny thing is it took me a long time in the dream. I was like, I just can't get this job done.
That's good. That's something. There's a blockage in your chakra.
A little more fiber, I'd highly recommend.
I'm just relieved I didn't wake up having shat the bed like Johnny Depp's chick. Remember her?
Amber, yeah.
Carl DeSantos says, I've had that public shit dream before. In mine, I was the only one. Do not wear white pants for a few days. Okay. I thought the other guy was late Friends actor Matthew Perry. Well, you mean someone thinks you look like Matthew Perry?
I'll take it. You know,
that's not bad. That's
I've done some
right.
things I'm not proud of in a jacuzzi.
Yeah, didn't they find him on his own?
I've never been
in a jacuzzi on my own.
That's true, eh? That's actually very true. It seems too indulgent.
But who would do? Like, what would be the occasion? Like, just signed
bubbles.
A massive deal. I'm in the money. I'm going to have a jacuzzi on my own with a glass of champagne and some antidepressants.
Well, he was at home in a jacuzzi, which means that there was a higher chance of him spending time in the jacuzzi on his own. I mean, listen. Yeah.
No, I think a hooker was there. I think a hooker was there and she
left.
Yeah.
She just ninja bombed off the like, hello, Matthew, can you wake up, Rick?
Like, you know
none of mine will ever stay and just read a book with me, even if it's
book. All you want is a bit of affection.
And they're like, oh, do you want to cuddle? I'm like, no, let's read a book.
You should say, well, I mean, if you pay them a little extra, they'll give you reading a book.
John and Mary went to school.
There's way too much experience in this room.
I'm just taking notes. Like something that's totally superfluous. It's like dating a porn star and then going back to wanking.
So I started to smoke again after like 10 years.
You start smoking
during
COVID.
I start smoking during COVID because I'm having a really cucked time and I'm double clutching. Yeah? So I start smoking again and he goes, yeah, it's like literally, it's like $250 a box. It's like, dating a porn star and then going back to masturbating, you know? It's
horrible. Just to spite it.
All right, now hang on. I do know that there's actually, so we have to do some business here because otherwise we're going to forget about this. You're doing a whole thing at Monte Cassino.
Indeed.
That we need to hear about. So if you don't know already, 6th to 17 August, that's now. It's already on.
Yep.
In fact, you've only got a couple of days left. So let's do this. Kurt's going to be there with a new one-man show, which is called Funny Side Up, and it's at Monte Cassino. He's been in Cape Town recently. He's done 70-minute performance blends. This is what the people write about you, right?
I check you reading the press release.
Relatable stories. I love the way when they say this stuff, it just somehow they make it unfunny. Yeah?
Geez, that makes me want to buy a ticket for that thing, eh?
Already.
The show next door.
Relatable stories. And a 70-minute, people are going, fucking 70 minutes.
I would go watch a show.
It's a long time without a
break.
He brings a hooker on stage and she reads a story. It's very relatable.
Do you know how funny that would be, though?
I'm doing it.
Please,
my idea.
Do me a favor. That is such a great idea. Just hire
vagina monologues.
And then the next week, a prisoner. And you just read them. I mean, you reading a story to a hooker on a stage.
I read her the story.
No, she's reading him a story.
Help me sleep.
No, she can't read.
She
can't read. So you've got to read her a story. And then she must just sit there and try not to look at her phone. I promise you, the people will come.
He's
Dave
got a
Levinson
show.
And a hooker on stage.
And special guests.
I mean, I think it would be so funny. You get a drug addict. But obviously ones that
Let's
you don't.
Do it.
You know, you can chain them to the stage if necessary, if they're a bit psycho.
So you stopping the shows now? You're doing it Friday only?
Only Friday.
Can I do that reading the hooker story on Wednesdays?
You could. I mean, that would be, I think people would come. But not for... It can't be a recorded thing that you watch on a screen. You need to go to, I mean, Dave plus a hooker on stage and bedtime stories or nursery rhymes. I mean, you could have some fun.
And
man.
A poll just in case the story doesn't work out. And not for the stripper, that's for Dave.
You want a Polish guy there?
Okay, but we're talking about a lot of shows here. So
okay,
this
sorry.
Is,
He's
that's
got a
Dave's
show during
show.
The rugby. But he's doing a show on Saturday at 5 o'clock.
Oh, man.
I'm brave that way.
He's not cancelling. He's doing it.
I've sold tickets. Yeah, people are coming.
There's going to be people
Dave.
Because there's some people who don't give a shit about rugby like me.
Enough of them to buy tickets. So there's no turning back there. I'm doing the show.
The director won't be there.
He'll be watching the rugby.
But who was I talking to about this just the other day? I remember when I used to go and DJ at clubs, and you guys can relate to this. It's not the same, but it's similar. Like there were occasions where you'd pitch up and it would be a sellout crowd and it would be a fantastic vibe and everything would be awesome and you walk in there feeling like a rock star. And then sometimes you thought it was going to be fine and you pitched up and there were 12 people, crickets. You're like, what? I remember I went to a thing in Pretoria. I mean, I just started doing this and DJing was stupid. I'm the first to admit it. What you guys do is really hard and it takes a lot of talent. But when you arrive at a club and you have to now you have to play music. I mean, it's so stupid. You're playing other people's music because I didn't produce my own music. And then you play the right selection of music and then they drink and dance, which they were going to do anyway. And I remember people saying, you know, we've come specially to meet you. And I thought, yeah, whatever. I mean, I'm getting paid anyway, so I'm up for it. But I remember pitching at some of these things and there would be such a small crowd.
So what do you do?
No, I mean, in the beginning it bugs you.
Yeah.
And you think, I'm a failure. Nobody gives a shit for what I do. I should find some other career. Maybe I should take up that course in plumbing I've always thought about. But after about three of those, you're pretty bulletproof. And then obviously, as you forget that you should be feeling bad about this and you become accustomed to the fact that whatever happens, happens, because things like rugby are scheduled at the same time. Then you go, this is going to be fine. And the moment you break through that wall of giving a damn, then suddenly it's fun.
There are exceptions to that rule, though. I used to do this gig at the small theater in Cape Town where you would do the comedy after the rugby. And which is very risky because it could go either way, right? Either it would be one mood of a fantastic crowd that were celebrating a win, or it would be completely sideways because we just lost and I've got to do the comedy. Yeah. It's like doing comedy at a wake. It's a cuck idea. And so you've got to take the good with the bad, I guess. And, you know, listen, there's two kinds of comics, the world says. There's two kinds of comics. Those who have died and those who will die.
Yeah.
It's just part of the game. It comes with the territory.
No, but when you see like 10 people, you're like, well, it's going to be a nice intimate evening just for the 10 of us.
Small but enthusiastic, yeah. Like Magoo says, come closer, people. Closer to the front.
He actually has moved. You've moved people before.
Oh, yes, I have.
You have.
Now, the problem is sometimes you've got like 12 couples sitting in 150-seater, so it's like they're all scattered. So you go, no, come closer. And
but people are also scared because of the way that some hecklers get taken to pieces.
Yeah.
And some oaks are brave enough to say something, but from a distance.
Yeah.
I don't want to sit in front of you.
It all depends where you play in as well, because there's like a heckling culture in the UK, for example. Then as the comedian, it's open season on you, bro.
Yeah.
And that's mean and angry, you know. Cape South African hecklers are quite cool. They're very, except for the one that Dave had the other day.
What happened?
Did I have a heckler?
You had a heckler the other day.
He doesn't even remember.
See, like 3 seconds into his set, they went, so when's a comedian coming on? I think he's lost his shit.
So what did you do? Climb into?
I lost my shit.
Did you?
Because I was the host. So as the host, I just want to get them quiet so the comedian comes onto what I call a clean floor.
Sure.
Get them maybe laughing. But also just get them quiet, get them in. So I said, good evening, gentlemen. We're starting the comedy in about 5 minutes. And someone in the front, and I overheard him. He goes, you call this comedy? And I was like, hold on a second. Because no one heard him. And that's the worst thing.
So what did you say?
So I said, hold on, ladies and gentlemen. This guy just said, where's the comedian? What is call this comedy? Yeah. First of all, it's a free show. And I said, I'm wearing these special steel-toed boots so I can kick you in your poos. And he had like a weird pedophile moustache, and his son was with him. That he was taken up by everybody. And then after the show, I said, so how was the comedy for you there, sir, Kevin?
And he never left. How can anyone still have a pedophile moustache in 2025?
I just called it that. I don't think pedophiles
are some people wear it with a sense of irony, you know? Especially those hippies in Cape Town. Sorry, what are they called?
Hipsters.
Sorry. Yeah. And there are lots of them in Cape Town. Bell bottoms, a midriff T-shirts.
How do you cope with that? Because I love visiting Cape Town, right? And it is a magnificent place, and there's lots to. The rest of the world can say all the nice things they need to say about Cape Town, but it's not a serious place, and there are a lot of people. I don't know what they do for a living. They seem to have enough to live, man, but I don't know what they do.
You ask these questions at like 10 o'clock. On a Tuesday morning in the forest, and it's chock-a-block, it's packed.
What do they do?
What do your oaks do for a living?
Right. I mean, it's appropriate if a comedian can wake up early. That's a time, that's off time for a comedian. There's no comedian working at 8 o'clock on a Tuesday morning, unless he's doing some corporate function for old ladies or something. But
is there one? Have you got one?
Do you want one? I'll send it
your
way.
An old lady or a corporate function? We're not sure which one.
I'll do golf days.
He wants both.
I did an old age home comedy night.
Really? How did that go?
It was actually quite lucky because what I did was what you said. You calm them down and say, listen, we're going to do this.
You had to calm them down.
Yeah, they were excited.
And they also took poos in public.
They were dumping while they were sitting there. At least with an old person, you see if they're pissing themselves laughing because their colostomy bag fills up.
Ah, shit.
But that was a nice night. And I came on stage to that song by Nine Inch Nails.
I wanna fuck you like an animal.
But it's a rocking song.
Wow.
If you don't listen to the words, they can't
hear it. Went through the chair there.
No, they were rocking.
Have the old people, they liked it.
This song's got a nice beat, hey Muriel. She goes, I think he's saying I wanna fuck you like an animal. He goes, well, I can't, the pulls, I don't have any pulls. It's a nice song.
I think we found the level now.
Tell me about your show, Kurt. Where is it?
Come, let's try and stay focused for at least
a
second.
Of the show.
Was cool is that he directed it from Joburg and I was in Cape Town, so we weren't even in the same city, which is fabulous.
Why would you entrust such important things to Levinson?
Okay, so this is how
Katy Perry.
This is how it works. You got to trust the sense of funny that's working with you, because when you're doing the stage stuff yourself, You're too close to the picture, so you don't really know if it's quite cuck, actually. So you need someone else to go, oh, no, that's quite cuck. Maybe you should try it the other way around.
Listen, I'm sure Dave is honest. He'll give you that.
If anything.
He'll give you that. But yes, I mean, he's the director of the show. What does that involve, Dave?
We were in.
What does it mean to be a director?
He's got a swimming pool the size of this table. So me and Matthew Perry and Kurt, obviously. And he said, "Dave, I need to do something that I can do, and travel and do things." And we sat in the pool. We had another margarita.
It must have been in summer.
It was hot.
And then eventually we came up with the name of the show. We thought about 10 theaters to go to.
Right.
So that's in a pool. So comedians, I mean, where are you going to have a meeting?
So did you come up with the fantastic,
the name,
groundbreaking, funny side?
I was under the water. So he's talking and I'm not even listening. And I come up like this and he goes, "What's the name of the show?" And I'm like, "It's called Funny Side Up." And then I went back under the water.
Were you drunk? Were you drunk?
We went as far as actually trying to
create a storyline around Funny Side Up. And we figured out that you can have a positive spin on really cuck things.
Yes.
And it stuck. A fantastic
message. But Kurt, that actually is genius. Because South Africans, the way you explained it now makes perfect sense. South Africans find a way. Look, our country is run by the fucking worst people. And our economy is in the toilet, like what I was doing in front of people in my dream. There's no kind of immediate savior on the horizon, but South Africans still have the best sense of humor.
Hey, we cope, so, eh? On a serious we do stuff. Yeah.
I've known him for 25 years. We did Going Nowhere Slowly together. We've done, you know, the drive to the gig and the drive home from the gig as comedians. That's where the funny is, strangely enough.
I'm sure you guys laugh.
So many stories. When you talk about honesty, I've heard him do stories for 25 years, and I sat in the car and I said, "Kurt, if I hear that stupid flippant story about the cop on the motorbike again, I'm going to hit you." So that's kind of pushed him to do new material. And this is when he's on stage now, he's actually doing the stories that I've heard in the car.
So now we're in the pool and I'm telling him about how I almost killed my dad. Right? So he's like, "Why isn't that fucking story on stage?" I said, "But that's real. That's personal. It's not a written piece at all." So he goes, no. Put that shit on stage.
What happened with your dad? Now you've got to tell us.
Do you know what he does? He tells the story differently than when he does his comedy. So a comedy, you know, you've written a setup and a punchline and you're waiting for the timing. But when he does his story, he almost changes, his whole face changes. So I said, "That's what I want to see on stage." So I kind of made myself the director.
I can hear this. Like you actually you're taking charge here. This is most unlike you.
He volunteered, just like that.
All right. Yeah. But what happened with your dad?
He was fixing the garage door and he asked the ADHD kid to hold up the door. And I went, "Oh, look, a squirrel." And the door slipped out of my hand. Listen, it's a big liquor long story.
Was it one of those metal ones that rolls up?
No. What it was, it's one of those flippy ones with the four springs on the side.
Oh,
right? So what he was doing was replacing one of the springs, and it was one of those. He was like a centimeter away.
My God. Yes.
But then he talks about so many things that are personal, and you can watch the audience leaning forward because there's not going to be a comedy like you. There's a setup and I'm going to be the butt of the joke. He talks about his dad dying. Oh. He talks about some of the stuff in his family with mental issues and things that have happened. Oh. So it starts becoming, oh, hang on, these comedians aren't all freaks. He's actually got some substance. And
well, you know how many times I've said, and the audience are totally on board with this now, whenever they see comedians on, with the exception of you, actually, for some reason, because you've been here a number of times, so they know you from when you had your own show as well. But when I've usually had comedians in, they start going through their sad stories.
Yeah.
And a lot of them, I mean, these are very sad people.
There's a very thin line between like comedy and tragedy. It's a very thin line.
Kurt lost an entire business, a whole comedy club during COVID. That's a sad.
A lot of you guys, people don't understand how bad that COVID thing was for comedy.
Huge.
For entertainment, in fact. We were talking earlier before we started the show about how there are two new groups of people in entertainment, right? And that probably goes for comedy as much as it does for TV, radio, podcasts, whatever. I had a meeting the other day with someone who's got a big name in the entertainment business. And we're going to do a show with him. And he says to me, oh, well, you know, it's going to, I need this. This is the kind of money I need to make this worthwhile. And I started laughing because I thought, good luck to you. I don't know if you've noticed, but they've just canceled Colbert. The View has gone on an indefinite break. That's Whoopi Goldberg's too expensive. Howard Stern is being fired by Sirius because he's too expensive. Like, those big names in media are falling away.
But I think there's more to it than just them overpricing themselves. There's a whole political movement against people that are sharing opinions in that public space that is against whoever's running that particular spot, you know?
Yeah.
So there's the last thing you want in that orange regime over there is people that speak a whole lot of sense to other people. It just creates all kinds of shit for them,
well,
I guess.
The funny thing is that I saw Greg Gutfeld, who's a Fox News guy, so he's very much on the Trump side of things. He went on Jimmy Fallon's show the other day, and they had record numbers. Now, Fallon needs an injection in his ratings because his ratings are cuck. So he got Greg Gutfeld on. Apparently, it was very good. I mean, there was outrage. You know, when people report there's outrage, there's never outrage. I mean, it means like they've gone and they've screenshotted 5 angry tweets from people who are either a bot or they're unstable anyway. And then they go, outrage as. I mean, the number of headlines about me I've read over the years are, Gareth Cliff sparks outrage. And then I go and I look for the outrage and I can't
find
it.
In Roman times, outrage was you were actually drawn and caught, you died.
Yeah, I mean, in Roman times, they would grab you in the market and stab you.
No, that was
they
outrage.
Say that an average vagina has about 2.5 million nerves in it, but it's not half as sensitive as a middle-aged man with a keyboard.
That's right. But the point I was going to make about Gutfeld on Fallon is that he went on there, and because all these late-night guys who used to be, I mean, Fallon's obviously a supremely talented guy. I don't doubt that for a second. So's Colbert. I don't agree with their politics. But what they've done is they've just completely shut out half of the American audience they could have because they're so on the left, just like you've got people who've always been on the right, that they're just saying no to kind of common sense stuff in broadcasting. You want as many people watching, as many people
so
listening
the right
as possible.
The right wingers are saying they preferred Johnny Carson's approach.
Well, Johnny Carson,
totally partisan,
never political, right?
Never.
I mean, even Jay Leno, he walked a very fine line, and Jay Leno, I think, had the highest ratings for late night TV in American history.
But he would break you down as soon as you went political. He would make a completely.
Well, tell us about you. I want to talk about cars. Can we talk about cars for a little bit?
Yeah, you know, so he'd change it completely. Your chin would come out. And
so people are missing that.
Great Leno.
It's moderate, isn't it? So missing that, just a guy with a no opinion.
How do you guys feel about that in comedy? Because we've got, right now, I mean, it's never been more fashionable to tear the ANC to shit now.
Yeah.
But I mean, I wrote
you'd be
that,
doing exactly that on stage. You'd be,
I wrote that letter. I wrote
not?
That letter to the president when Zuma was president in 2010, and it got me like pilloried in the media. They were, oh, who does this white oak think he is? Right? I mean, anyone in the country could write a letter to the president. So at the time, I didn't think this is going to be controversial at all, and I was the only person who was criticizing the ANC because everyone else is kissing their asses, right? And then suddenly, couple of years later,
it's cool again.
15 years later, now it's super cool.
But wouldn't you be splitting if I was on stage and Kurt doesn't do political? And one of the things we did when we wrote the show was it's so easy to go, isn't that guy a fool? And then he said, I'll be the fool,
right?
I'll take the brunt.
Right.
So the whole audience,
you steer clear of it,
But and so I've this is in this show, Funny Side Up, it's the first time I've tackled a political thing. And I think it's important we have to criticize and ask the questions.
Sure.
And sometimes I don't make any big statements. We just ask the question. It's like the situation with the South African Air Force, for example. I mean, that's
how many planes do we have?
We got 3 now. We used to have 4 about 3 months ago. We got 3 now. We got 1 cargo plane, right?
And the one can't go.
We've got a training plane. A training jet. I don't know what they're training for because there's no kind of future past that point. Like, and then one dodgy like Honda VTEC helicopter, you know? And I discuss it quite in depth in the show. But it's and then about a year ago, I was invited to the opening of Parliament in Cape Town with, I was a plus one, a mate of mine.
You didn't write any legislation.
No, I didn't put forward anything.
While I'm here, let me pen some legislation.
This is an interesting story, though, because a friend of mine who is a lobbyist for access, equal access, she's in a wheelchair. Okay. She went, good, come along, let's go.
Well, she needed you to push her. That
is a true story. So yeah. Taryn and myself headed out to the opening of Parliament.
Sure, I'll go to that.
Man, firstly, we couldn't get into the space at all.
It was observatory.
We literally parked in Vredehoek and I had to push it down. And I thought,
because of the parade and everything.
Well, it was all controlled by South African Defence Force and they had no idea what to do with us. We had all the accreditation and the lanyards and all of the special zappy
stuff. They don't know what to do.
They don't know what to do with a wheelchair. So I'm like, bro, I don't come here with a wheelchair to like bomb the place.
You know?
I mean, exactly.
Yeah, but you can't even joke about that.
No, of course not.
Because they have no sense of humor.
So that you and me, so we go around for a while trying to find an entrance to this place because I can't push it too far.
No.
Eventually, some senior traffic officer comes over and goes, "What's going on here?" I said, "I explained the situation to him." He goes, "Okay, why don't you park out back? I'll give you a place in the VIP parking area." I almost fell off my chair, bro.
Oh. She almost fell off her wheelchair.
I've not seen so many luxury SUVs in my life.
What is it with? Because I don't think a lot of these people had cars like that before they went into politics.
No. I also can't see why, you know, serving the public requires you to go from 0 to 100 in under 8 seconds.
That's what I'm getting at. It's like, my first car was a fucking Chico. Remember those Chico Golfs?
Hey, snap, bro.
Yeah, remember those? Those are like
Opel Cadet Cub, man.
Opel Cadet Cub.
You know, I paid for that car. I looked at through some old stuff.
How much?
And I was in the army, and I came out of the army, and I had a job as a barista coffee guy.
Oh, right.
I bought a car. Think about that as a middle class.
How much was it?
So it would have been about 17,000 rand.
Yes, it's for a car. Oh. I reckon they're probably.
Hey, it was the 1.6.
Gen Z's listening to us now going.
It was the GLS, eh?
Holy shit, that's the cost for a car?
Yeah, it's the cost of a service on a car now.
Oh,
do you know how bad my ADHD is?
How bad?
I'm playing Tetris with your jersey.
With your waffle jersey.
You're talking serious shit about the government. I'm going, I could get that block there.
I could drop 3 layers later.
You know, I'm winning.
All right, so. Because we're going all over the place.
Oh, sorry.
So you are not going to go heavily political, which is a relief, actually, because I think people have had enough of it too. And as Dave says, it's easy, right?
Yeah.
It's too easy. It's like you want to craft comedy that's smart so people by the end of it go, holy shit, that not only was that hilarious and I've laughed a lot, but fucking clever too.
It needs to be clever, and here's the thing that we don't do too often as comedians. It's got to be honest. It's got to share a real piece of your soul.
You guys are honest. That's what you do.
So something with directing a friend of yours is quite interesting, because if you think about it in a work situation, you often get asked your opinion in work, and then you must never give your opinion at work because they're going to hate you for it.
Mm.
But when you've known someone for 25 years, I literally have to stop him and say, hide the punchline. Because he's so excited to do the joke. I'm like, no, hide that away. You're now on stage. They must never know where you're going. So as long as they're sitting there going, I didn't expect that. Wow, I didn't expect that. So the whole time, I didn't expect that. I didn't expect that. I didn't expect that. Now, after an hour, they walk out there with a completely new feeling about how they are about their stuff.
So the best compliment I got on the night, on media night last Wednesday, was some lady came up to me after the show, because, you know, we do the drinks and the chat and a couple of pictures after the show. And she said, that was the weirdest experience, because at one moment you brought me close to tears telling us about your dad and what he meant to you and that he's gone. And then 10 seconds later, I'm screaming with laughter. So it's a lekker roller coaster. Cool. That's a huge compliment.
That's very cool.
And then he signed her boob and she went home.
Now listen, do you, Dave Levinson, do you find it is easier to say the things and direct and be able to advise almost?
I wouldn't direct another comedian.
But do you do this for yourself? Is it the same process?
It's the strangest thing. So I've written a show now and this is what we spoke about. You said, Dave, why aren't you doing what you're telling me?
Exactly. Yeah.
So I have written a show, but it's also so scary. Because what you don't want on stage is, as a comedian, you want that dead air freaks you out.
Mm.
But it's actually the best thing when you watch actors. They go, I didn't know that. And then there's that silence. Mm.
So there's
we're
a big,
so scared of it.
There's a big difference between club comedy, which is machine gun fire. You got 10, 15 minutes up there. That's all you have.
It's war.
It's exactly. It's battle. Whereas,
especially if Kevin's there with his pistol.
Whereas a theater show, for example, you can meander and have the silent moments without the panic, you know? And it feels different, and you are allowed to tell the story and get a little more personal and pull up a chair. And so you can't do that in a club, whereas this kind of space you can. And I think
you
interact with the audience in a completely different way, really.
Yeah, I've always had, and Dave knows this too, I've had the greatest respect for the fact that you guys can go out there. And as you said a second ago, it could go anywhere. This could go anywhere. And the audience kind of trusts you when they walk in there. There's sort of a tacit agreement. You're going to make me laugh. I'm going to feel better when I walk out than when I walked in. But at the same time, everybody knows there's massive risk. It could just fall flat, right?
You spoke about it a long time ago. It's fucking fantastic. Getting a thick skin.
So yeah.
When you did the DJ stuff and there were 12 people, the next time you appreciated that the 1,000 people way more.
Yeah.
And you got such a thick skin knowing, hang on a minute, I'm going to make these 12 people never forget this.
And by way of example, because I've never become jaded about that, I got an email on Monday from someone called Robin who listens to the show. And she said in this email, I'm going to have to get used to this one show a week thing. Because it's not, you know, it's part of people's lives. And I get that. I never overestimate my own influence on other people's lives because I think, you know, some days they might just decide, screw that guy. I'm not interested in what he has to say anymore. And many people probably have fallen by the wayside. But she wrote this beautiful email to me about how it's become like a part of her, it's one of her habits, one of her things. She switches on the show in the morning, listens to it on the way into work, drops her daughter at school. Yeah. And I thought, you know what, I'm still blown away by the fact that we can connect to people either through comedy in your case or through doing what we do on this show. And that to me is, you must never get blasé about that.
Well, it's a privilege.
Yeah, huge.
It's a huge privilege to be able to speak your mind because most of us don't. We sheep and we follow, especially if you're employed in an organization where you expected to comply and roll along with it. So to be able to go up there, share an opinion that's not everybody's, sometimes there's always going to be a certain amount of crit for the way you approach it or even your thoughts or your ideas, but it is certainly a privilege to be able to share that with an audience, really.
So Kurt's biggest fear was relevance as a 50-year-old white male. As a 50-year-old coloured male,
I was like, where's the white kid, bro?
You're like gay
somewhere in your family. some young from Rubik. But relevance is such a big thing. And I said to him, there's nothing better than integrity and honesty because then relevance doesn't matter.
Yep.
Well, because the story is yours.
Isn't it amazing that, and I hate to bring up someone who's not been around for this long, but, you know, these Gen Z kids are now discovering George Carlin.
Like
25 years or something after he died.
And how honest was he?
I mean, superb, right? That stuff's ageless.
That's the gold class of
for sure.
Comedy. That was my introduction to comedy. I was in Standard 6, and a friend of mine's mom came back from overseas with a tape. And on one side was George Carlin, and the other side was Richard Pryor. That's my introduction to comedy.
That's arguably two of the most influential comedians in history. Really,
I would say those two guys were almost undoubtedly my favorite comedians. I remember Richard Pryor, like before he did the movie roles that stuff, he was edgy as hell.
So just how edgy he was he set himself alight by accident.
Yeah.
And then...
Well, he tried to kill that one girlfriend as well because she stole his car. It was some... I mean, like, what a mess.
What a beautiful mess, though.
Yeah. Why do funny things happen to comedians? And it's weird. I said, Kurt, when you tell the story, you can do the same thing that Gareth did today. When you tell it, it must be funny.
Yep.
So that's the key, and that's a gift, maybe.
But that is the gift, because I've heard people tell the most amazing stories, but they cuck at telling stories.
Yeah.
So they don't build up to anything.
So
the garage door almost killed my dad. I was standing there and then the garage door just about fell on him.
So there's storytelling is an art form. There are layers to it.
Yeah.
For the average audience member, they'll think of it as one thing, but there is a whole lot in storytelling. There's the non-verbal thing. There's the body language. It's the gesticulative value of playing this out.
For sure.
Describing the characters. And then sometimes it is just it's what's not said. Just like good jazz, it's the great pause in the center that makes the song work. Great comedy works the same way. We've watched George Carlin do it. We've watched Richard Pryor do it. Eddie Murphy do it. That fantastic pregnant pause in the right place is a punchline on its own.
Carl DeSantis says, the irony that these politicians do not demonstrate the sense of urgency anywhere but in their cars. To your point earlier. Story.
The blue light.
The blue light brigade.
Vyasin wants to know from both of you, was there a time when you guys did a show and the laughter was at an all-time low?
You know what it is? It's not. I wouldn't do jokes just for laughing. What I want is someone to be surprised, and I want him to go, I didn't think of it like that. Yeah. So there's no laugh in that. You get clappy audiences. And also, he had a show the other night where they were dead silent, and he actually asked the lady to put the lights on to see if anyone was there. so he starts panicking, and I'm like, no, wait, hang on. There's a laughy audience. There's a clappy audience. Yeah. And then there's an audience that's going, this was not what I was expecting.
They're awestruck.
And then so after doors, the show,
they came in and they said, what a brilliant show.
Yeah.
I was confused for a second. I was like,
but you do get people who have decided they're not going to.
But how did the collective consciousness of that audience just going? But they were all shocked because they thought comedian. So next door is Joseph and the Technicolor Dreamcoat.
Yeah.
Theater.
Do you know how much? Do you know how Gareth. Much I would hate that?
Theater.
Do you know how much I would hate that?
So next door is Kurt, and his poster's like his face like this, and it says funny side up, and they're like, oh fuck, what's this? Because obviously they couldn't get tickets to Joseph.
Oh, so it's the gamblers.
Man, okay. No, I'll get them in whichever way.
I said to Kurt, next door is Joseph from the Technicolor Dreamcoat, and the other side is Kurt, which technically colored.
Technicolored Dreamboat.
So I watch these people with their tickets, like, oh, fuck, okay. And the unexpected is where they don't laugh because they come out going, that was just so cool. In fact, go and see it again. And then
yeah, but
see
I think
funny.
That what Vyasin's asking about here is like those people.
Happened.
No, but those, you get those grumpy bastards. They've either been brought by their wife or.
Yeah.
You know, she's like, we've got to go and do something because I can't look at you in the house anymore and I'm sick of arguing with you in private.
But I can tell an audience from the phone call I get from the organizer.
Really?
I can tell if it's going to, and he'll tell you the same story. What is there? Is there a spotlight? Where am I standing? Who's coming? And then you're like, ah, shit.
Free gigs. I don't do them.
Free ones.
Free ones. Yeah. No. Free ones, there's no investment from the audience side. And it's not about the bucks. It's the it's an investment. It's a token of their investment in their time and their energy. They're coming to a comedy show. So what happens is a lot of the time these gigs, they have these free gigs. So all of a sudden there's these five friends that haven't seen each other for 10 years. They want to catch up and there's a comedy show happening in the corner. There's no investment on their side. Halfway through the show, they're like, can you shut the fuck up? We're trying to catch up here.
I'm trying to break up.
It's like, I'm sorry,
girlfriend.
We built a comedy club around your table. There's Cornwall Deluxe, but
are you angry now, Kurt?
I am. Did you
show some
that?
Emotion. What I want as a director.
It's also, it's true to say, and you guys can argue with me if you disagree about this, but it's true to say that comedy is also, it happens in the wild. Like, it's the only art form where people will shout back at you. I mean, you're never going to do that at the ballet.
No.
Some chick is doing
you to do it, Joseph.
I mean, can you imagine you go to a music and you're like, boo, get off, you cuck.
Gary, you told me something when I did that radio show, when we had our show.
Yeah.
You taught me something, and I'll never tell you this because then it'll make you feel cool.
Well, you're about to, so go ahead.
I was telling you a story once, and it had to do with how I felt about something. And you said, Dave, how does this affect you? Why are you telling me this story? This has no effect on you. Nothing in that story is going to affect your life. And I was like, fuck, this oak's right. And then I just stopped telling the story. And then I realized you can't change certain things.
No.
And you just got to go for it because it's not going to be forever. You're going to do another show that's great.
Yeah.
And I walked on stage at Parker's Comedy Club at a Friday night. I was in a good mood. I walked on stage and I overheard a guy turn his back and said to his girlfriend, fuck, I hate this guy. I just walked on stage. And I was going, hey, everybody, how you doing? And this oak said that, and it took away all my mojo.
Yeah.
Because the whole time I was thinking, shit, man, why does this guy not like me? But the 40,000 other people, well, 312, they probably like me. And I concentrated on the one guy that said, fuck,
yeah,
I hate
but
this guy.
You can't help it, right? I mean,
it's human nature.
So, an inside track, if I may, when as a stand up, there's almost, you've got to embrace whatever's going to happen there. And you've got to embrace it. It's like, you know, when we played improv stuff, if somebody comes, listen, you're in a gynecologist office, you have just had a test, and off you go. You got to embrace it. You can't go, whoa, where? You got to embrace it. And it could go either way.
That face again?
The guy.
What?
You got to have your feet in the stirrups like this.
It's good. So,
what, doctor, I think I'm at the wrong dentist.
Two stripes for what, hey?
Man, your teeth are looking dreadful, but your gums are great.
How can you see his gums from there?
I think the
word is vagina.
I saw a funny clip yesterday of some, it's like an old clip from the 60s or whatever. It's been made to look old. And this woman goes, why is it that you men have two brains and you don't use either of them? He goes, well, same reason you got four lips and you can't close them.
See, that's from the 60s, eh?
That is, yeah.
No, that's old. That's old, but it was good. So, all right, Congo Chris says, okay, hang on. He's got all these people here.
Is he from the Congo?
He's from the Congo, yeah. Fantastic. That's where you get his name. The SA Air Force was the second Air Force in the world, says Slippery Pickle, but we probably have less functioning planes than we did during World War One. That's probably true. It's only a matter of time before someone in Parliament comes for one of the comedians. Keep going, gents.
Thank you.
What do you guys need?
I'll do it.
I heard you shouting and screaming there. Ketsy, what's happening?
You know what? James isn't here. It's just the show's going so well.
There was a very important part of the conversation with the Air Force.
I'm the only guy in the whole fucking place who talks to my producers while the show's going on. Sorry, guys.
So there's a certain part of it that we didn't get to say is that we've got about 12 warehouses with like hundreds of planes that are inoperational because of service issues.
Are they just sitting there gathering dust?
They're just gathering dust.
They've never been serviced.
They don't have the right equipment to get them fixed. They don't have the budget to get them fixed. So it's not just that we only have three planes. The word force, Air Force, it suggests that the person or the people you're going to exact this power against should be fucking scared.
Yeah.
But that's not a force anymore.
Usutu threatened us last week.
And we probably would lose.
We've got an air suggestion at this stage, but not much more. Donkeys are serviceable.
An air suggestion.
No force.
Air suggestion.
Maybe it's interesting because when did it start going wrong? So you go, okay, well, it's because of the new government, because of this. There's a number of other reasons.
Mm-mm.
Someone's stealing money so that they can't service them.
Well, also, they haven't invested in it in ages.
So I know they've cut the military budget substantially since the old regime, and they did that on purpose.
They bought 14 donkeys from Lesotho.
No, there was the arms deal under Joe Modise. I mean, like, we don't have to go into a long historical explanation because mostly it's boring, but you can kind of understand the old army was regarded very poorly by the ANC because they were the victim of them so often, right? So they must have said at some point, we don't need to spend a lot of money on this. We'll spend rather on education. But they eventually ended up stealing even that which they earmarked for education and health and all the rest of it. The other problem is they kept on putting ministers in there who have nothing to do with defense. We've got currently Angie, remember Angie was in education? Yeah. Angie Motshekga is the Minister of Defense. Now, Angie couldn't defend herself.
The Minister of Suggestion.
Against a stray goat. She wouldn't know what to do. She couldn't like swing a...
These portfolios are meant for professionals in that particular space.
Especially
and they just hand them out.
And something like defense, I mean, if you're a country, listen, you need a defense force if you're a country, not because you are going out there to conquer lands like it's 1800, but you need to be able to defend yourself, your borders. Your country has to, in order to be sovereign and taken seriously, you have to, if Zimbabwe decided tomorrow, because Zimbabwe's got a better defense force than we do, if Emmerson Mnangagwa wakes up tomorrow morning and goes, you know, I've had enough. And he decides, today's the day. He could roll across our northern border and pretty much annex Limpopo, and we'd have nothing to say to it.
And
we've got
G4S and ADT, I reckon. They might be able to offer some kind of
it. They'd be a better bet than the defense force.
I think
you've
so,
You've got
too.
A joke about ADT guarding the police station.
Yeah, ADT. There's a big sign outside the Claremont Police Station. It's we are being observed. That's a nice euphemism, right? Observed by ADT. I'm like, my bro, am I the only taxpayer that's concerned about this shit? It's not Christian.
All right, let's see what else is going on here quickly.
Because a lot of his Zimbabwean army are here already.
Yeah, they are, except they're not in the army anymore. They're driving Ubers. The old regime, it was unpatriotic to challenge the defense budget. Well, that's also true in America, right? That you don't if they say they need $500 billion for missile technology, everyone goes, sure, whatever you need. The SANDF has the discipline of a toddler. I'd like to remind everyone, says Congo Chris, this is what I'm getting to. Our Navy managed to sink one of our submarines. How the puss do you...
He
says, how the puss do you sink something that's meant to go underwater?
No, we not only sunk one, we've got another one standing on bricks that's rusting in Simonstown.
On bricks.
On bricks, like an old VTEC on the backyard somewhere.
Like a Cressida.
Like an old Cressida, exactly. It's all rusted and a bit cuck.
I saw an old Cressida the other day. Do you know how I laughed? I was driving behind, but old, eh?
Now listen, it's a big deal.
Remember
in
the... They used to have those metallic, but it's like a light metallic blue.
Yeah,
remember
GLI-6.
There's a dead body Cressidas in the back of that boot. You know
for
that.
Sure.
But the thing is, if you got the phone call, you would laugh and say, the submarine is sinking. You're like, okay, that's good.
It's a good thing, right?
How deep?
No, I think what happens is it sunk and it just didn't come back up.
Did they leave the porthole open? What did they do?
You know, this is the problem with a submarine. It requires a certain skill set to operate it. You know, it's not
My grandfather always said, when one door closes, another one opens. He was great with advice. He was a terrible submariner.
Grant says, I love that Kurt and Dave have the same hair.
We're same age.
No, you used to have the same hair. There's a lot less of it now than they used. Oh. Well, listen, but then again, I've got a lick a big five head there as well. Actually.
Yeah, but you're doing that thing where you've got it like it's poofed up a little bit. So it looks substantial.
You know how long it takes him to do his hair? We had to get up at 4, and I hear in the bedroom, and I hear, hey, what the fuck's he doing? He's got the vacuum cleaner.
The vacuum.
That's the vacuum. I suck it up.
That's clever.
Much better than a
little bit of wax. Yeah, off we go, Bwicky. Yeah.
I use the vacuum cleaner for a completely different reason.
That's right. We're not allowed to speak about that in public.
The vacuum cleaner before.
The crusty vacuum cleaner. Oh. Yeah. Cheesy vacuum cleaner.
Cheesy.
Too much info, perhaps.
Chris says Angie couldn't tell the difference between defense and a naval.
But what's nice is that we're talking quite heavy stuff about Defence Force.
I know,
and then
but
someone
we...
says, you guys have got the same hairstyle.
This is what happens. There's a town in KZN which has been called Cressida, where they still use them as taxis, says Durban Dope. I don't believe you.
No, there's a lot of South Africa that still use them as taxis, even in Cape Town. Huh? Like informal taxi business. Yeah.
But they had those... They were before seats were made of leather. They used
also
to have
became
fabric
a very
seats
aspirational
with patterns
vehicle
in them.
Oh, yeah.
Because it was the 80s, right?
So, you know, so let's call pre-apartheid, a Cressida was a very aspirational vehicle.
Sure, once.
And it isn't a bad car.
No, it isn't.
Fact that some of them are still on the road means they can't be bad cars.
No, they're great cars.
A guy won one of the first lottos, a black guy, and they said, what are you going to do? And he said, I'm going to buy a Cressida. That's how aspirational it is.
You might not know this, but I've got an Insta page called Kurt Loves Cars. I'm a serious petrolhead, bro. Put it this way, I'm a slave to it. I don't have a choice.
Okay, well, we're going to put that on hold because we've got to take a quick break. We come back with Kurt and with Dave. Stick around. This is our last Wednesday show, so you have no excuse to miss a single second. Don't go away.